Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio, in cooperation with Scout.com, WarNest.com, and Frat House Sports, this is Inside the War Nest, the show made by Philadelphia Eagles fans for Philadelphia Eagles fans. Have a comment or question? Call us live on the air, 347-826-9964. That's 347-826-9964. And now, to take you through the week that was and the week to come in Eagles football, here are your armchair generals, Jim Williams and Mike McShane, inside the War Nest.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Jim Williams. Mike McShane will join me in just a couple of minutes. First, after what we've seen the last few weeks, it's time for an opening commentary from yours truly. You remember the joy and jubilation we all felt coming out of Thanksgiving Day in Arlington? You remember it, don't you? The Eagles had just beaten the hated Dallas Cowboys 33-10, and all was seemingly right in the world for us Eagles fans, right? Remember that? If you don't, well, you're only human. The Eagles have since lost three games in a row, some in blowout fashion, some to quality opponents. But most recently, they lost one to a far inferior football organization, and that ultimately ended any hopes of a postseason for the Birds. You know, it's only natural to second-guess yourself after three losses in a row. Only natural if you're a fan, a player, or a coach. You start asking yourself, what if? What if they had tried a different player at a different position? What if they tried a different scheme or play here or there? What if? Well, Chip Kelly, what if?
You talked about all the what ifs this whole time, and now there's...
Yeah, I didn't talk about any what ifs.
We didn't like to talk about what ifs, so now that we know...
And why should I have talked about what ifs? Exactly.
You guys aren't in. How did that... After, you know,
I mean, we got to go play the New York Giants, and we're going to finish, and hopefully we can get 10 wins here, and that's what our focus is on right now.
Obviously, Eagles head coach Chip Kelly is not about what-ifs. He's about what needs to be done, right? In the here and now. He wants to better his team. But let's face it, even though there's one game left in the season is already over. Going with the status quo does nobody any favors. But alas, head coach Chip Kelly will trot out many of the same names and faces, both good and bad, that have led the Eagles to each of their 9 wins and each of their 6 losses this season. An inquiring mind during that very Monday press conference had the gumption to ask Chip Kelly why he's playing a meaningless Week 17 game in 2014 as if it had all the meaning in the world, say like Week 17 of last season.
What's the upside of not playing some of the younger players, at least to get evaluation on tape?
The upside is we're going to go win a football game, and that's what this whole organization is all about. It's not about trying to see what the future is. It's about we got a game. I would not be fair in any of my beliefs, and I would not be fair to any football player right now if I said to some guy, hey, I know you're a better player, but I'm going to play a younger guy now. That's not what we're all about. That's if you want to go do that, go somewhere else. That's not us. We get a chance to go put the ball on the ground, we're going to go play football. That's what we're going to do.
But the organization has done that before, so it's your...
I wasn't here before. In the 2 years I've been here, we're going to go play football. Okay. In the 2 years I've been here, we're going to go play football. And that's the message from the owner to me. That's what we're going to do. If it wasn't like that, I wouldn't be here.
So you want to stay with what you know and what you know has failed you much of the last month and not take the necessary time to evaluate younger players that could be a vital part of your team next year and beyond? You feel that maybe against New York the same players will finally get the job done in a game where, realistically, neither team has major incentive to perform at their very best. I mean, really, shouldn't you just at least take a step back and consider that maybe, just maybe, you need to alter some of what you're doing, change it up a little bit.
You've had a lot of success in your career with some out-of-the-box thinking. I know you haven't gone into full season evaluation mode yet, but is it your sense as of now that perhaps there's some things that you need to alter in future years about your own approach?
I'm lost on that. Out of the box.
So we go with regard to the tempo of the offense.
No, I mean, I think our offense is one of the most productive in the National Football League. You can look at it statistically, so I don't look at what we're doing from an offensive standpoint as a reason we're doing what we're doing in terms of us not being successful in certain situations.
Interesting words, and dare I say damning words, from head coach Chip Kelly. And note, he didn't talk about his defense there, ladies and gentlemen. You know, speaking of defense, let's talk about one of those defensive players in particular, cornerback Bradley Fletcher. Earlier this week, a fan made a 5-minute-long YouTube video paying homage to the several instances, and several might be a minor word, might be more like, I can't think of the word, but there have been more than a few instances of blown coverage by Fletcher on top flight wide receivers this season. Said fan actually said it to a Sarah McLachlan song, which would be hilarious as hell if it weren't so true. Yet still, Coach Kelly trotted Fletcher out to start at cornerback, more or less the Philadelphia equivalent of leading a lamb to slaughter. Now, to logical people like you or I, it makes all the sense in the world to perhaps change things up a little bit and give Fletcher a break. Maybe have him come in relief. Kelly didn't do that. No, Bradley Fletcher has started all 15 games this season, and barring injury, he may or may not start in game number 16. The obvious question that comes to mind is, why? Why, Coach Kelly, could you truly believe, do you really believe, that Bradley Fletcher is your best option at cornerback?
What is it about Bradley that made him a better option than either Nolan or...
I think Bradley's played well during the year. You know, you talk about he got beat a couple of times by Dez Bryant, but on Thanksgiving he didn't get beat by Dez Bryant. He actually played well in that game. So, you know, you got to look at it through the whole time. I think there's been times where he's played really good football for us. So,
those times are seemingly here and gone. So Coach Kelly more or less says that Fletcher is the team's best option going forward. He goes so far to say that he's played well and he likes what he's seen out of him. Defensive coordinator Bill Davis has assigned Fletcher to cover some of the best wideouts in the National Football League. Let me give you some numbers, shall I? Jordy Nelson, Dez Bryant, DeSean Jackson among those receivers. How have they fared? Well, in one game, Jordy Nelson of the Packers had 4 catches for 109 yards. Dez Bryant in 2 meetings against the Birds, 10 grabs, 187 yards, and of course in the Sunday Nighter, 3 of them for touchdowns. Most of that damage, of course, done on the Sunday Nighter in Philly. And Jackson, he turned Bradley Fletcher into scorched earth. 9 receptions, 243 yards in 2 games. He's given up plays of 50 or more yards on multiple occasions, dare I say a routine basis during that 5-game sample size. And yet Chip Kelly still has the nerve to say that Fletcher's playing well out there. Is he watching the same game we are? No, really, I'm being serious. Is he? I mean, can he find a common denominator, just at least one, behind the futility that his football team has had since that big win over Dallas on Thanksgiving Day?
Chip, in this 3-game losing streak, is there any one common denominator that you can identify that, you know, is the reason?
I wish there was. I mean, that'd be easily to attack, you know what I mean? I think there's a lot of different combinations. That's what makes it a little frustrating, a little bit difficult. So.
I guess he can't. Obviously, he hasn't been listening to this show over the last several weeks because Mike McShane and I have gone through many, many things that have impacted this team's performance and impeded their chances at winning. Off the top of my head, I can name a few. The secondary is undersized and lacking speed. The tempo offense doesn't seem to work well when you're trailing in a football game and getting 3 and outs like crazy. The team has lacked discipline, picking up stupid penalties that have cost you first downs on offense and defensively have cost you the situation where other teams continue drives that otherwise would have been stopped on third down. You're also not showing a commitment, a solid commitment, to the running game with LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles. And that's all I can think of off the top of my head. I could go further. You need any more, Coach? But let's take a step back. After all, we can't do anything about what's already happened. We can only look ahead. And what's ahead? Well, there is a game on Sunday.
Right, we're going to win the football game. So there's no, hey, let's go see what we can do. Our job is to go up and play the New York Giants, and we're going to do everything we can to beat the New York Giants. And
that would have been a great soundbite if your team still had a chance at the postseason. But they don't. His team's loss to Washington Saturday, followed by his rather chippy, dare I say, self-righteous remarks in his Monday press conference, have made one thing abundantly clear. Chip Kelly's honeymoon here in Philadelphia is over. The media and fans alike must hold him accountable for his actions in games. If they don't, if we don't, then 2015 may prove to be a tougher season to stomach than 2014. Chip Kelly, it's time to get your head out of the sand. The honeymoon is over, effective right now. We welcome you to Inside the War Nest. Jim Williams here. If you have any thoughts, feelings about the commentary I just offered up, give us a call, 347-826-9964. Enter your thoughts in our chat room. I bring in my colleague and co-host, Mike McShane, who I know has been chomping at the bit to say a few things. Mike, your take on what I said.
Well, you hit it. Wow. No, I'm not even going to even attempt to go anywhere near it. You know, what we heard on Monday, Jim, and I think you summed it up, I hate to admit this, we heard a lot of Charlie College talk. Mm. That's the kind of thing that I would expect coming out of a bowl game, and God knows we've seen a hell of a lot of bad ones of those in the past couple of days.
Oh, yeah.
But, let's get the fans riled up about going into Sunday against the Giants. Are you kidding me? I don't know. The guy just doesn't seem to have a sense of, I don't know. At times he does have a sense of Philadelphia fans, and at times he doesn't. Wasn't this the guy that said, hey, we're Philadelphia, we fight?
Yeah. Yeah, and yet the last couple of games when his team is down in the fourth quarter, he punts. That is a metaphor, my friend. That is a metaphor. And it's one that is not going to sit well with this fan base in the here and now and could be a prelude of things to come if things don't change. And that's going to be the ultimate thing. Over the course of the next hour or so, we're going to talk about the debacle that happened in Washington back on Saturday and how it cost Philadelphia a chance, any hope of the playoffs. The pros and cons, there were a couple of pros from that game, to be honest.
Yes.
We'll also look ahead, thanks to going behind enemy lines with our guest from thegiantsbeat.com, David Aiken, about a game that on paper is meaningless but has more meaning at least to one team than you might think.
Right.
And time permitting, we will also give out some naughty and nice list awards, because this is Christmas Eve we're recording this on. But anytime you want to stop the action and just chime in with your thoughts, your feelings, and your takes on what is to come with this team, you're more than welcome to. 347-826-9964. That's 347-826-9964.
And may I say, Jim, anybody that is actually listening out there right now tonight, thank mm-hmm. you so much for supporting us here at Inside the War Nest and also here at Red House Sports. Because, I mean, it is Christmas Eve. Thank you.
Yes.
I appreciate it.
It is Christmas, Mahana, Kwanzaa, Ramadanica Eve.
There you go. Right.
Yes. And as soon as I'm done here, I lend my voice to something else, and I have to give a shout-out, if I may, to my buddy and pal, Brian Henniger, who is listening in the chat room and responding to us. I am going to be hanging out with his family via Skype this evening and help with his family's Christmas Eve festivities but via Skype, which is going to be a lot of fun.
You got yourself a busy, busy day today, haven't you? Huh?
Yeah, ooh. I do. Yeah, I do. And I thank him also for the two Phillies hats he sent me in the mail. Very nice. Very nice. I'm still waiting on the gift from the frat house, but we'll worry about that later.
Wait a minute.
It got lost in the mail. I'm only kidding, Mike. I'm only kidding. I'm trying to lighten the mood because what's on the table
tough,
next to talk about is depressing.
Tough. Yeah, this is
very
tough.
If you had told me the Eagles were going to, and we even said it, the one thing that matriculates in my mind from our show last week is that, is this even a game? This is a slam dunk. Dare I say, you were almost going Howard Eskin on me and saying, stone cold mortal lock. Well, thank goodness you didn't, because you would have lost the frat house on it.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 weeks ago, this team had better than a 90% chance of making the playoffs Well, you can't really, the numbers never lie, but in this case they do lie because they're not going to the playoffs after losing to Washington 27-24. What did it come down to? Where did it all go wrong? I think you have to start looking at penalties and the lack of discipline this team has shown.
Yeah, there were a couple of things, I think, but you're absolutely right. I mean, the thing that absolutely burns my hide, and here we go, I got to use it again, on this one, is that it was just 3 weeks ago, we're looking at a team and we're saying, hey, it's automatic, this team's going to the playoffs. And now we're sitting on the outside looking in. And everybody's got, you know, Jim, it brings up so gosh darn many questions. You know, did this team step forward? Did they step backward? Are they really all that good? You know, we talk about, and you're going to hear it later on when we get a chance to talk with our guests from the Giants website. You know, are they really that good a team? Or have we just been sold a bill of goods? And I think that's what hurts so darn bad. Now, for all those people that are sitting out there that want to sit back and question or second guess, Chip Kelly, at times I got to be honest, I have sat back this week and I've gone, I don't know, is that really fair? Is it really fair? I mean, I love your soliloquy that you gave there at the beginning of this program. But at times I sit back and I go, I don't know, is this really a fair thing to do, to be slamming him so badly for every... I mean, look, the guy's a two-year coach. He came out of college. He has no professional experience, NFL professional experience. I mean, I don't know. Is it – who are we to judge, I guess, is basically what – you know, the Philadelphia Eagles fans, we have a tendency to put ourselves up above everybody else. And we say, oh, well, we know it better than everybody, and we're going to question – I don't know. At times, you know, I don't –
I think some of it comes down to frustration. This team, this city has been without a football champion for 55 years now and counting, going back to 1960 when you were just 75 years old. No, I'm kidding. But I mean, there's frustration in this town having been so close with Andy Reid and couldn't get to the top. With Dick Vermeil, couldn't get to the top. A lot of great teams with Buddy Ryan couldn't get close to the top. Now you see this newfangled thing, and honest to goodness, the thing I'm reminded of when I look at the tempo offense anymore is this is this decade's version of the Wildcat.
Okay.
I mean, defenses are figuring it out. It's not that hard. It's not as hard as some people make you want to believe to figure out, and it doesn't help that the league officials aren't going to, you know, help the cause either by – you know, rummaging things around when it comes to trying to, you know, ruin the pace of play, as it were.
Yep.
So so that's part of it.
Look at what you're – look at the comparisons you've just made of Chip Kelly. And mind you, I find myself being a bit of an alien here, sounding like I'm actually defending Chip Kelly, because I'm not a big Chip Kelly proponent. I really am not. I never have been.
Mm-hmm. But you've been the most skeptical of anybody I've known,
Absolutely. It's very difficult to make comparisons of him to Buddy Ryan. Look at the time we gave to Buddy Ryan, to Andy Reid. Look at the amount of time we gave to Andy Reid, to Dick Vermeil. Are you kidding me? That guy had to build a team from virtually dirt. I mean, there was dirt at Franklin Field, huh?
Literally.
That's the guy built a team from.
True.
We have not given Chip Kelly enough time yet. Now, you make a very good point, and this has been something that I've been bringing up now for the past couple of weeks. I think even right here on this program, if not on this one, on one of our others right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. But have we caught on to Chip Kelly too quickly? You know?
Yeah.
One of the things, if you remember, that I was screaming for just a week or two ago, innovation, give me some versatility. It's become predictable. The game planning has become predictable.
And it was never more evident than in that Cowboys-Eagles game on Sunday night how predictable the offense was. Almost three straight three and outs against the Dallas team while we were down three scores. I mean, you can't expect the parallels I draw between this Eagles team are actually between this team and, to a certain extent, a championship team from a decade ago, and that's the New England Patriots, and I'll tell you for why. Only, obviously, we're not executing nearly as well. the Patriots back under Belichick, even to a certain extent today, but especially like 10 years ago, they were the kind of team that would win 37-34 games. They would put up 30-plus points a game and win because they had to, because their defense was atrocious. That's kind of the vibe I get. And that's all well and good if you have players on defense and the right schemes on defense to make it work. From the front seven up, okay, yeah, we do. The secondary is nothing short of atrocious. Mm-hmm. Undersized, underspeed. I was watching that Fletcher video I was telling you about, not just because I'm a masochistic person and enjoy a good Sarah McLachlan thing when I'm depressed, but because the picture shown in the slideshow, there was at least 2, 3, 5 yard separation between the wide receiver and Fletcher on so many of those images, and I'm like, yep, I remember that, yep, I remember that. And now Fletcher, who is listed on today's injury report as a limited practice participant with a hip injury, it's looking like he may actually get benched for week 17, for game 16, I should say. Why now? I mean, you know, why not a couple of weeks ago? I have no problem with him playing. Maybe he just shouldn't start.
Right. Well, and listen, I'll tell you what. How about I do this one? Because, look, it is Christmas Eve, and what the hell? We're throwing everything out the window. How about we move this agenda around a little bit? Let me jump ahead to a particular topic that I had thrown on the agenda for a little bit later in the conversation. What's the number one thing that needs to be addressed in the off season? What's the number one thing? I've got a lot of people saying, hey, it should be the quarterback. Hey, we need a wide receiver. What needs to be addressed is the secondary. That has got to be number one on this team.
Amen. Praise on brother McShane, please. I mean, that's exactly it. And the Eagles are in a position where they'll be middle of the first round, and they're trying to stockpile picks, I'm sure, as well. You've got to focus on the secondary. If this team drafts a wide receiver, or heaven forbid, a quarterback, and knowing them, they might, early on, there are going to be a lot of people.
I know, that scares me. That actually scares me.
There are going to be a lot of people saying WTF around here. You know what I mean? I mean, this team needs help on secondary. I truly, and there was a damning quote from an article. I've got to pull it up. I'm going to have to do it on the fly because I missed it. I glanced at it briefly before the show where, and I don't think it was in his press conference, but according to various sources, Chip Kelly's saying that Nick Foles may not be the man starting at quarterback next season.
Right. Yep. I think I was over on TSN Philly.
Yeah, Zach Berman of the Philadelphia Inquirer also picks up on it. They haven't made a decision about that, and the evaluation process has begun. You know, Mark Sanchez could be the starting quarterback next season on this team, or it could be somebody else. But like I've said, since Sanchez came into play, he just needs to be a facilitator. He does not need to be Superman and throwing 50 times, although he did against Washington Saturday, and he wasn't that bad, as we mentioned, save for the pick that ultimately led to the game-winning field goal. He could be the quarterback. Nick Foles could be the quarterback. I might even stretch to say eventually Matt Barkley could be
Don't
the quarterback.
You Don't you dare. Don't
no,
you dare.
No, I'm only saying that because as long as we have a competent secondary that won't get blown and look like scorched earth on a regular basis, we can win games. The Eagles can win games. They will be shootout games. They will be Mylanta-grabbing games, but they can win games and win a division. With a secondary in place, it's almost a miracle they have 9 wins right now, to be honest.
I agree with you. Just for I was going to use a four-letter. I won't, because it's Christmas Eve, and we don't want that kind of talk on Christmas Eve. But
Brad House Sports cares.
For the fun of it, let's take a look at things for a moment. Go back to the 2 games previous that we lost against Seattle and against the Dallas Cowboys. Jim, you and I are coming on here. What are we berating? We're berating time of possession. We're berating the fact they didn't have a ground game. We're berating the fact that Sanchez really stunk up the houses. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. Now, take a look at this week's game plan. This past week against the Redskins, Not too bad. Are you kidding me? The Eagles controlled time of possession, 32 minutes. Are you kidding me? Sanchez,
yeah.
Sanchez had a 75% completion rate. Are you kidding me? McCoy had 88 yards on the ground. Are you kidding me? Zach Ertz got in the game, 115 yards. Huh? Are you serious? This was not a bad game plan. What went wrong? What went wrong, Jim? Guess what? We nailed it. What went wrong in all three games? The defense. And it was the defensive secondary. All three games. Bam. There it is.
That's the problem. And if he can't find the common denominator between those three losses, Chip Kelly, that is, maybe he should look at the Michigan job where he can get away with having an secondary because you can shoot him out better in college. I don't know. I mean...
I don't want him over at my Michigan Wolverines.
It might make you turn into a Spartan.
Oh, please, come on. I got to deal with him here. I don't want him over there. He's not a Big Ten coach. Please, come on.
Well, yeah, he was barely a Pac-12 coach, to be honest. The other thing that comes to mind, you talk about all the receivers and how McCoy had a good game. Zach Ertz made history, the most receptions for a tight end in Eagles history in a game. Unbelievable performance from Zach Ertz. I'd been saying, where has he been the last few weeks since Sanchez started under center?
Mm-hmm.
What the hell is with Riley Cooper?
No, really.
I mean, you know, pardon my frankness. He has to have incriminating photos of Chip Kelly kicking Rex Ryan's feet or something. I don't know why they keep throwing the ball to him, and for once, for the first time, I'd say all season, he was actually capable and worthy of the job.
Oh, boy, you're giving him a lot of credit. Because
well, no,
look,
I mean, I think this was the game where he had the most receptions this season. I will quickly check and fact check that to verify. But
well,
he actually showed the hell up.
Yeah, he was 5 for 53. He averaged 10.6. He was targeted 7, so he really only missed 2. I think those two, though, were probably good ones, I'll bet you. Although they're coming from Sanchez.
Oh, end zone stuff, of course, sure.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, let's get this one straight. At this time of year, it's always funny because, you know, and Jim, you know as well, you know us over here at Frat House Sports. We
right.
follow every single game. It's not just our home teams. And we're pretty good. We're pretty on top of things. With all the different people in the NFL. And all of a sudden, you're seeing some guy coming out, and he's picking up reception after reception after reception for, I don't know, the freaking Minnesota Vikings. And you're sitting there, and we're going, you know what? It's bonus time, folks. It's bonus time of the year. Well, that's what it was for Riley Cooper. Hey, you got to get so many catches, otherwise you don't get your incentive.
Yeah. I mean, it was. I was going to say to myself also to a certain extent, well, maybe somebody has Riley in his fantasy football team and is looking
It's all about contracts. I'm convinced
yeah.
It's all about contracts. Riley Cooper's getting with the, you know, they're all in the union. Look, they're all in the union. And Sanchez is like, you know, and Cooper's coming in. And the word's spreading around a lot. Hey, Coop's close. You know. And so somebody's coming up to Sanchez and going, hey, come on, man, you're going to get him a couple today? I mean, you know, come on. That's what it's all about.
And to fact check myself, he did have a game where he had 6 grabs this season against San Francisco. I didn't even notice. Most people wouldn't. But
he probably averaged 4.6 on those.
Actually, nine. He had 6 grabs for 54 yards. But still, I mean, a guy who was paid a whole lot of money to be after an incredible season where he was the secondary guy to DeSean Jackson, and it's busted, which raises another point you
yep.
wanted to talk
yep.
about.
Yep.
The DeSean Jackson scuttle, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
In hindsight, is it a mistake?
Was it
a mistake?
I think one has to say, as we look at it, you know, and look, when it ultimately went down, Jim, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, I'll let you answer for yourself, but when it ultimately went down, because I had bought into the team so much, I sat back and I said, all right, we're going to be okay. We'll get around this. It's not a big deal. The guy was an egomaniac anyhow, and the guy was a bit of an egotist. And, hey, I don't know. I mean, the things you hear is that there were locker room issues and whatever. All right, fine. But when you look back on it now in hindsight and what DeSean Jackson did for this team, that is scope-wise, offensively, I think you have to admit that it was absolutely the wrong thing to do. And to just let this guy go as, I mean, you know, evidentiary.
For nothing.
Right. The word is, this was Chip Kelly's decision. I don't like the guy. We don't get along. I mean, you know, look, put the big boy pants on, man. You're in the NFL. I'm talking to Chip Kelly now. All right. You know, this ain't college. Charlie College kind of crap. All right. You can't just go and cut a guy. I mean, if the guy, look, fine, he's got issues. Deal with it. Mm-hmm. He spread that field out. We know that. And we know that was integral to what we were doing last year.
And that performance he had, his two performances combined against Philadelphia this season, that was a statement to Chip Kelly.
Yeah, look at this.
He backed it up and then some, which raises yet another question. How arrogant is Chip Kelly? I mean, you sort of heard it in the sound bites that he is, as I said, a wee bit chippy.
Mm-hmm.
But how arrogant is it? Is he arrogant to the point that he knows in his mind, his conceit is that what he did to excel at Oregon is guaranteed to work here with no alterations in Philadelphia?
Well, you know, in some respects, I like your question. I might actually bounce it back to you because you did the intro to this program, and I think in some respects you kind of addressed it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure. I'd like to think that he's not. I'd like to think that the guy is willing to be introspective and go, you know something? What worked at Oregon, what worked at Oregon may not necessarily work here in the NFL. And you got to hope that a guy like that adjusts. I don't know. You know, you and I talked about it a little bit last week. I brought it up here. You concurred. Boy, oh boy, he's starting to sound like Andy Reid. Maybe Andy Reid times three.
Need to do a better job. I know what I'm doing out there. Yeah, I'm going to take full responsibility. Time's yours. If you start saying time's yours, I'm leaving. I am leaving if he starts saying time's yours. But seriously, there are traces of Andy Reid. There are hints, subtle hints of Andy Reid's, shall we say, lack of, how could I word this? Lack for the moment. Lacks for the moment, you might say. When it was Andy Reid here, of course, it was the worst timeouts known to man. When it's Chip Kelly, it's being lax on making changes that need to be changed with personnel. I don't know many teams that stay with the same personnel the entire game, at least in the secondary. You do change it up sometimes when you know something isn't working right. And
are they all the same, though, Jim? I guess maybe I'm asking this, but in order to be an NFL coach, do you have to be an egomaniac, with the exception of maybe Mark Trestman?
And that can't, I see what you did there because he went to the CFL. He won something in the CFL, so you got to give him props there. You have to have an ego to be in this business. You absolutely do. If you don't think that your poop don't stink, you shouldn't be coaching, okay? By the same token, you don't let that conceit, you don't let that convinced conceit out to the public. You don't show off that bravado like Chip Kelly has done to the media the last couple of weeks in defeat. It's all right to be PO'd and upset and what have you. Well, hey, we all are here. It is not a happy holiday for Eagles fans. You know this as well as I. But there's a way of holding accountability for yourself, and Chip Kelly has not done that to my knowledge and to my liking. But that's okay though, because remember, there's still another game, Mike. There's still another game.
All right. Well, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question now.
Yes.
Because look, You know, and I'm again, I'm going to harken back to something that I said last week.
Mm-hmm.
We came out of last season. The previous season, we were 4-12 under Andy Reid. Mm-hmm. And we went 10-6 with Chip Kelly, and we went to the playoffs. And worst case scenario, we're going to be 9-7. Best case scenario, we're 9-6. But the bottom line is we're not making the playoffs this season. All right. Are you still in with the Chip philosophy?
Tough question. There are elements of it I don't mind. The tempo offense, when it works like gangbusters, is arguably the best show on turf. It really is. But again, it's all about having the right personnel. At various times, we haven't had the right personnel, whether it be offensive linemen who have been injured for prolonged periods of time, whether it be some of the scheming as well, that they don't run the football enough to, at the very least, keep the offense honest. They have, the Eagles, that is, two, maybe three skilled receivers. Mm-hmm. I would say Macklin is a skilled receiver. I think Jordan Matthews is becoming a skilled receiver. I think Zach Ertz, Brent Celek, you can make a case for them as well. You know my disdain for Riley Cooper. As we've seen yep. this year, it's been proven evident that he is not a slot
nope.
receiver or a tertiary receiver, or he shouldn't be on this team, but we have to keep him because, well, Howie Roseman and company signed him long term. Defensively, I don't buy into, and that's the question. The second, I buy into the scheme to a certain extent. A scheme is only as good as its personnel. And we've said it till we're blue in the face, the personnel on secondary are abysmal for this team. In a perfect world, they'd all be cut. Honest to goodness, they'd all be cut. The ones who are starting regularly, let me rephrase that. We haven't seen enough of Nolan Carroll to make any heads or tails out of him, for example. He could be great. He could be just as bad as Bradley Fletcher. We'll never know, and we may not know this week. It depends on injury and a few other things. So I'm skeptical.
I've heard people calling for Bill Davis to be fired. Do you put any blame of this at Bill Davis? See, from where I come from, I think Bill Davis has been a victim of his circumstances. He has done
you know
well
what that
with
means.
What. Well, yeah, he's done well with what he's had. I mean, if you're only going to give me so much, well, then guess what? So let me ask you again, and, you know, I hate to, you know, I'm not trying to dominate the program back from you, but let me throw the question at you. Do you move Bill Davis?
I'm 50-50 on that.
Okay.
Let me put it to you this way. I will tell you what will probably happen and what I would do. What I would do is I would keep him around one more year and see what we can build around that secondary through the draft. Through free agency, the Eagles are $20 million under the cap, so they've got money to play with. Granted, they have to worry about signing Jeremy Maclin, another question I'll ask you in just a moment about. But mm-hmm. there's money that can be played with to get at least one or two solid members. And players on the secondary don't cost an arm and a leg anymore. So they can get a couple of decent role players, who would be better than what's in place now. I'll tell you what will happen. I think he will be fired. You said the ultimate term right there and then, a victim of circumstances. That's what he is. He's a victim of personnel that just can't get the job done. And what's the easiest thing to do in sports, Michael? It's not to get rid of the players. It's to get rid of the coach. So I think he is gone after this season.
Wow.
Though I wouldn't do it. I would be 50-50 at best on it, and ultimately
either.
I would keep him around. So
wow, that is rough.
It's rough, it's not fair, but it's probably going to go down that way. That's the way of the business. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong.
I think it's wrong. I think it's the wrong thing to do because
I agree.
Look, I understand that there are people that are out there that are angry. But I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think you can necessarily put this at his feet.
You only give me
certain things to work with. Well, then I'm going to try to do the best darn thing I possibly can. And if somebody, you know, look, we have seen this defense actually get better from the beginning of the Chip Kelly regime until now. It's only gotten progressively better. I don't know. All right.
I don't know either. Well, one more thing before we get to our interview, our behind enemy lines thing. Yeah, we may be going overtime tonight, folks. It could be that kind of a show. I mentioned Jeremy Maclin, and I talk about the $20 million or so under the cap. This is contract time for him. Don't think he's not going to play with some purpose on Sunday. You better think again. You know he's going to. So the question is, I'll bounce a would you question here. Do you sign Jeremy Maclin? Do you sign him long-term, or do you sign him to a couple-of-year deal, or do you sign him at all?
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you what right now. 347-826-9964. I want to hear from all Philadelphia Eagles fans, because I'm going to tell you right now, I am about to say something that's going to be ridiculously unpopular. There is no way I sign Jeremy Maclin. None. Zero. Okay, now, why? All right. Yeah, he had a tremendous year. Terrific year. But I'm going to tell you something. You can get wide receivers out there. There are free agent wide receivers that are available. And there are going to be a hell of a lot of rookie wide receivers coming out in this draft, which we could get. Not in the first round. We don't need one in the first round. Don't even be thinking first round for a wide receiver. They better be looking at the secondary, the defense for the first round, second round, third round. You can get really good wide receivers in the third round. We don't need to spend an arm and a leg on Jeremy Maclin. And look, I understand that the Philadelphia Eagles, they're $14 million under the cap right now, and I think the cap is expected to go up by $10 million. So the Eagles right now would be technically, on today's standard, $24 million under the cap. I understand all of that. But we're going to need a quarterback because, look, we're not signing Mark Sanchez. That's the bottom line. That's not happening. You're not signing Mark Sanchez. So we're going to need a backup quarterback because Nick Foles is probably going to be the guy. And we need a whole lot of help on the defense. I'm telling you. I say let Jeremy Maclin go. You got Matthews, work him into the mix, and go build a wide receiver.
They hadn't signed Riley Cooper to the deal they signed Riley Cooper to. Would you change your tone?
Yes, absolutely I would. I mean,
okay.
Well, I can't believe that we're saddled with this guy. Are you kidding me?
You and me both. You and me both.
See,
it goes to
exactly what I think that we had supposed, Jim, and that is they didn't believe that Maclin had it in him to have the season that he did. That's why they only signed him to a 1 year, $5 million show me deal. That's why they did that. They didn't think he was going to come back. They didn't think it was possible. So that's why they signed Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't think that was going to – what did Maclin do? Maclin went and, you know, well, he shot the lights out. So what are we going to do?
Absolutely.
We can't – frankly, here's what I don't want. I guess basically what I'm saying is this. I do not want my team pinning their hopes on Jeremy Maclin. That's what I'm saying.
You said one of the lines that stuck out at me, you don't want to sign Jeremy Maclin to a deal that's worth an arm and a leg.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I wouldn't sign him to a long-term deal, the leg part. We don't know that he can stay healthy for a prolonged period of time. The injury he suffered last year, a lot of wide receivers don't bounce back from that kind of thing. So I'd sign him to like a short-term deal, 3-4 years, but you know just as well as I do the way agents are, not
going to
buy
better.
That.
Yeah, he's going to do better than that.
He'll do better elsewhere.
Yep.
I would sign him again to a 3 or 4 year deal tops, but you know, I wouldn't sign him long-term just because if he goes down again, you're screwed.
He's the number 8th wide receiver right now in the entire league. That is by virtue of yardage, 1,269 yards. He's got himself 10 touchdowns.
I'm with you
in
that.
I'm going to tell you right now, the guy's going to get big money. He's going to get big money.
And after this season, I don't deny that he doesn't deserve it. I mean, he hasn't shown prolonged play like that. That's the thing. You've seen this one season. He was in a contract year. He gets paid. Maybe he settles down a bit. And you can't afford to have that happen.
Well, now, you said you would sign him for 2-3 years.
Yeah.
But you've also indicated you don't think that that's going to be satisfactory.
It won't be satisfactory
his people. Are you indicating, though, that you believe that we're going to lose him?
There's a chance. I think they do sign him. I don't think they sign him long-term. They can kind of afford to because they're under the cap the way they are. But if you were to give me a percentage, I think 60-40 comes back to this team.
All right. Okay.
I'm a little bit more confident than you are. A lot more confident than you are, to be honest. So.
Well, I wouldn't even make the effort.
Well, you wouldn't. You'd be like, yeah, keep him. And
I'm waiting for that's why I'm waiting for the switchboard to light up, because I just said something that I'm sure is incredibly, unpopular.
But honestly, you're right. I mean, you can get quality. I mean, you could trade and get secondary parts for Macklin easily. And you could pick up good young talent at wide receiver in this draft coming up in May. So your points are well taken. Don't get me wrong. We are at a point in time, 7:46, as we do this live. We've got to get to our Behind Enemy Lines segment. It's a lengthy one. TheGiantsBeat.com is also a Scout.com website, just like yours truly here at WarrenS.com. We had a chance to talk with David Aiken a little earlier today, and he offers his insight on the Eagles-Giants game Sunday and how it's meaningful for one team more than the other. Take a listen. And as promised, we're going to go behind enemy lines right now, courtesy of TheGiantsBeat.com, a fellow Scout.com website. Please welcome contributor David Aiken inside the War Nest to go behind enemy lines. Happy holidays, David. How's everything going up that-a-way, up I-95?
Good. Thank you all for having me. Happy holidays to you guys as well.
Certainly.
Thanks, David.
Certainly. Let's talk about the big story up there the last several weeks. It's pretty much been the calling card story for the entire season for the New York Giants, and that is the circumstances surrounding Tom Coughlin. The fan base right now, what are they sensing, and is it more we've seen the press clippings in newspapers the last couple of weeks saying there's a 99.9% chance he's coming back next season. What's the fan base sense for what's going on in regards to your head coach? And do you think that 99.9% is likely? Do you think he's coming back next year?
Well, to answer that first question, yes, I do think it's coming back. I think Tom Coughlin will be returning. In terms of the fan base, I think the people that really follow the Giants and know how they operate know that outside of a disaster scenario, which the Giants pretty much almost walked themselves into, they're picking themselves out of it right now, Tom Coughlin was going to return. And I think most Giants fans understand that. I think the team isn't really one for a big splash. I know Jim Harbaugh is the big name out there. I don't think the Giants are ever going to consider someone like that. The thing with Tom Coughlin that, I mean, he's 69 years old. He's the oldest coach in the NFL. And I think that even no matter how this season went, I think the Giants have been planning for his departure on his terms in the foreseeable future. And I'm just speculating here in terms of this, but a move they made this past offseason that was really interesting and kind of caught people by surprise is they brought in longtime offensive coordinator Kevin Gilbride, retired, left the team. They brought in Ben McAdoo, the quarterback coach from the Green Bay Packers, in a completely new system. It was really a strange move to a lot of people, given that the offensive system – making that change with Eli Manning, he's been in one system his entire career. He's getting older. It's really a move you want to make. But that just struck an interesting chord with me because it could be a situation where McAdoo, more forward-thinking, good success and a good organization in Green Bay, coming in, offensive coordinator for a year or two, could even pass on the torch. It seems like a very Giant way to do things. I think that might be a situation you look at it that way. But ultimately, maybe not every Giants fan is happy. I think it's in a way, 3 straight years without playoffs, some people do want to see a change. But ultimately, I think everyone's accepting and is ultimately okay with it, given everything he's done for the organization. going forward. And the and what hopefully we'll see this coming Sunday will be a good end to the season as well.
David, this is Mike McShane. The interesting thing you just said there, you said that it's a Giants way of doing things. And, you know, that's interesting because I read an article recently right down here in this area that basically said the same thing. The Giants are a type of organization. They're not, let's put it this way, they're not the Jets, okay? The thinking has been that management would like Tom to walk away, but they don't want to be the heavy in this because the guys brought them 2 Super Bowls. Is that the sense?
I haven't gotten any sense like that. It's just the Giants, as you mentioned, aren't the Jets. They do a pretty good job of keeping things in-house, and a lot of things are just really guesswork. I mean, even when the team was at the heart of the disaster this year, you know, 7 straight losses, and that culminated in a loss to Jacksonville, a game where they blew the lead, 20-point lead, one of the biggest comebacks of the season came against them in Jacksonville, lost to a team they really should have beat. At that point, you would thought, this is when it's going to come down, this is when you're going to start hearing things, but you didn't. You really didn't hear anything. It was just complete silence. Sometimes that in itself is an ominous indicator, but there's really, you know, the NFL, and especially in New York, you can, you know, someone can always hear something, something's going to be in a paper. There was nothing really. So I think it's an interesting point that maybe they want to see him walk away. Perhaps, I mean, sounds like he'll be back, and I wouldn't be surprised if next year with him coming back, I'm sure he will, if even next year was his last year, because he, you know, he's by almost 10 years. He's the oldest coach in the league, and he's really not going to be around much longer coaching in the NFL either way.
Does 1 year really make that much of a difference, though, David? I mean, from your perspective, I mean, wouldn't you think it would be better at this point for him to just, you know, walk away? Let's get a fresh start here.
That is a good point. I think part of what it is the Giants, the big collapse was really last year, where they were kind of, they're trying to keep pieces together, keep veterans together. You know, they were close before last year. I mean, they made a Super Bowl, won a Super Bowl. They've always been a team that has hovered around, you know, close to the wild card, close to the division. And when they'd make it and get hot, they'd have a chance to win one. But 2013 was really the season where everything really fell apart. And this year was kind of felt like the transition that they should have had the year before. So I feel like they just kind of owe him that as well, to give him that last chance. And again, I think you've brought up a good point in that it's kind of tenuous to have to let him, you know, be the one that fires him, you know, unceremoniously, kind of hoping he does walk away. I would say the Giants don't really need quite a reboot. I think they're just in a transition. Right. You have to make really the decision to make fundamentally with that is Eli Manning. Do you think he can still play for another, you know, 4 years, or are you ready? Because his contract is up next year, or are you ready to just, you know, part ways with him? I think if you were ready to do that, you know, reboot definitely would be on the cards. But at the same time, you know, he's having one of the best years of his career this year in just year one of Ben McAdoo's system. So there's reason to roll with him and keep more transitional rather than that reboot.
Right. Certainly. And speaking of the potential of rebooting everything, there are a lot of young pieces who, especially in the last few weeks, have stepped their game up and made a case that, you know what, maybe this team should be rebooted. Chief among them, some guy I affectionately call Brother Odell. We're talking Odell Beckham Jr., who has had a breakout year. Let's talk a little bit about some of these improving pieces. And, you know, you have Andre Williams at running back. You have Rashad Jennings at running back. There, you know, you have star players on this team. It just comes down to the depth chart, and there isn't much of a depth chart. And, of course, part of that's because of injury, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, injuries has been a theme from the start. When every team has injuries, the Giants shouldn't make too much excuses. But, again, that's the point that you just mentioned. You know, teams with less depth, you know, get found out quicker when injuries do happen. I mean, my sense during the beginning of the season, the Giants started 3-2. Of course, it was the Eagles that gave them the wake-up call, really. But the Giants almost felt like they could have started 4-1. They had a game in week 2 where really they were in control. They were beating Arizona. They really should have found a way to win. But they gave up a punt return and then a fumble on the next kickoff. And then before you know it, the Cardinals were up 10 points and the game was over. It really kind of felt like a game that the Giants, you know, you come away and say, wow, the Giants could be 4-1 at this point. And that was when they really had all these pieces going. But at the same time, you felt you know, it's fragile just given what could happen. And, you know, before you know it, Rashad Jennings suffers an injury against Atlanta in that third win. Victor Cruz suffered the injury against the Eagles. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie got banged up. And just it really just kind of culminated. It just kept the snowball, if you will, just kept rolling. Before you know it, the Giants had they built up the secondary in the offseason. But the top four corners on the roster, three of them on IR at this point. And the name I just mentioned, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, not on IR, but did, you know, miss a good deal of time to injury as well. But yeah, depth is definitely an issue. They wanted to see Reuben Randall step up as a receiver. Right. They were kind of hoping that, I mean, Beckham, if I'm sure you guys remember, didn't start the season. Yeah, mm-hmm. He was a late bloomer. He really, everyone was kind of wondering when he was even going to get on the field because he didn't even, I mean, part of what makes his story so interesting, he really didn't even practice in the preseason. That first week before Atlanta was really his first real practice time, and he, you know, caught the game-winning touchdown just right away, came on the field. But the hope was that you'd have him, you'd have Victor Cruz, you'd have Reuben Randall as a third-year, second-round pick, you know, really stepping up. Really hasn't. The offensive line, they've made a lot of changes. The star power really isn't there. The quality on the first team quite isn't there really either. And the pass rush, you know, the Giants, it's been hot recently. The Giants have been playing some teams that cannot protect their quarterback. So that has something to do with it. It's been hot recently, but for most of the season, it hasn't been there as well. So depth, definitely an issue as well, but some quality in key areas, notably offensive line and getting a stronger pass rush consistently, I would say it's been a big issue.
That's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, star power, the concept of star power. I think that's one of the things that a lot of, well, football followers, you know, not just Giants fans, but football followers in general, you look at that Giants team and you say to yourself, what's missing from this team? And really what's missing is that one big name, you know, and that's something that I think a lot of us have come to know the Giants for. There's usually one big star power there on that team, and it's kind of lacking a little bit. Now, maybe that's because Victor Cruz has been out, because I think Victor Cruz for a while was that star name. You know, Eli Manning has been that star name. But right now, it seems to be a little bit void.
Yeah, Odell Beckham has stepped up into that role now. But I think what it is the big name, the player that was really, he's come on lately, but the player that the Giants really expected a whole lot from was Jason Pierre-Paul. For much of the season, he just wasn't getting it done as a pass rusher, and he was looked at as the key as the, in terms of the pass rush as well. So yeah, I think that's an argument you can make. And the Giants have had a little bit of bad luck in terms of recent drafts. I mean, the one player they were really hoping that was going to be a spark was their 2012 first round pick, David Wilson, the running back. Obviously, bad neck injury. He made the smart decision and retired when symptoms recurred in the summer. But I think you're right. Odell Beckham really is starting to take that mantle. I think going forward, the Giants have an absolute superstar in him. But that's part of the transition this season. It hasn't been consistent. And, you know, the fundamental pieces that you'd like to see, I mean, when the Giants are winning, quietly good on the offensive line, would be able to run on most teams, which is not the case at all this year. And then pass rush, just an embarrassment of riches usually is what you'd expect the Giants to have during their winning seasons. The likes of Strahan, Umanura, Justin Tuck, and then Jason Pierre-Paul was a complimentary guy in the last Super Bowl. Not complimentary, he had 16 sacks that year, but he was just one of several guys at that point. Now he's the guy. Hot right now, but for much of the season when the Giants were really needing him and hoping they could find a way to stay scrapping in the tough NFC, wasn't really there to be seen.
You talk about Victor Cruz. You dropped his name a couple of times. Of course, the last time these two teams met, torn patellar tendon, and Victor Cruz's season was done. What is the belief up there in regards to Cruz long-term? Will he be the same wide receiver that we've seen in years past when he comes back next year? And do Cruz and Odell Beckham Jr. on paper make a formidable 1-2 combination, do you think, in the division next year?
Well, on paper, Giants fans are definitely excited to see that. In terms of how he recovers from the injury, a lot of people are saying that, you know, you never quite recover from that injury. Just in terms of the research I've done myself about it, it seems to be a psychological thing. Some players can never get over it. They never trust their knee again. You know, other players, you know, they find a way to get over it, and they're maybe not 100% to what they were, but, you know, can reach a still a level of quality. Victor Cruz, that, you know, that short area quickness is such an important part of his game, so it's really hard to say. But the good news is, I mean, the way Odell Beckham is playing, Victor Cruz doesn't have to be, you know, the number one receiver even going forward, because what Odell Beckham is doing right now, he drew attention pretty much right away, even before he really exploded. The Giants played the Seahawks about a month ago, and Richard Sherman was showing him a lot of respect. So they have a player there. I mean, it's clear for all to see that Odell Beckham is going to enter next year as the number one receiver, and that'll help take pressure off Victor Cruz. I mean, in terms of, you know, Victor Cruz has always been reliable. He'll still be able to make some plays, I'm sure, even if he never returns to 100%. Giants fans are excited to see that, because even it's really been since the past month, it's been the Odell Beckham show.
Yep.
Last month, or last game rather, Reuben Randall had probably his best game of his career. But it's really, he's been a pretty big disappointment this season. When the Giants were relying on him mostly, before Odell Beckham really exploded, the efficiency wasn't really there. His numbers just not what the Giants needed to be. So having that target come back, even if, you know, he's not quite as good as he used to be, is something to look forward to, for sure, for the Giants.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, it's crazy because you hear people talk about Victor Cruz as if he's, just about retired. This kid's only 28 years old. He's got himself another good 5, 6, 7 years in the league. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. it's ridiculous.
Agreed wholeheartedly. We're talking with David Akin from thegiantsbeat.com, inside the Warren Nest, going behind enemy lines. Jim Williams with Mike McShane. We look ahead to Sunday's game. Many here in Philadelphia, I'm sure Mike and I included, after the last 3 weeks, are looking at everything in hindsight and saying to ourselves, well, this Eagles team was not the world-beating, dominating team that we saw Thanksgiving Day against Dallas and Arlington. So it raises a couple of questions. Number one, are the Eagles really on, you know, really a better team on paper than the Giants? And in fact, I'll go right there and ask you, David, when you look at these two teams and where they've come in the previous 15 games, which team right now is better, Philadelphia or New York, or are they kind of even?
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing about the Giants, I mean, they want to go into this game, you know, ended on a 4-game winning streak. And the big thing here is that they finally want to beat a team with a winning record, and this is kind of the key thing. They haven't done that all year. The story of the Giants has really been, and I guess to answer your question in a word, you know, the Eagles are the better team in my mind. And I think the Giants will have some challenges. And I'll go into further detail in a moment. But the Giants have not beat a team with a winning record all season. And that's kind of the theme, is this, that, you know, the Giants can beat bad teams. You know, they're not a bad team. You know, they kind of fit, you know, right under what a potential playoff team is, really. You know, they've beaten Atlanta. They've beaten the Redskins twice. You know, they just beat St. Louis, which is probably their biggest win of the season, really, beating St. Louis in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a different level when you play, you know, a team like Philadelphia. I mean, I know LeSean McCoy hasn't been what he's been in you know, last year, for example. But one of the best games LeSean McCoy has had all season was against the Giants, the first game they played. Being able to stop the run has been a huge problem for the Giants. If you can run the football, most decent to better teams can, you're going to cause the Giants a whole lot of problems. You know, one thing the Eagles can always do in the passing game, create big plays. Giants struggle with that all season. You know, sign of a bad team, it's given up those big plays. Giants have struggled with that. In terms of the Eagles, were one of the teams as well that have given, that gave the Giants a whole lot of fits in terms of pass rush. And that is something where I think, you know, the Eagles have superiority as well. I mean, it hasn't been the best year for the Eagles up front in terms of what they had last year on the offensive line, but they still have a better offensive line than the Giants. They'll be able to run the ball more consistently. And the run defense the Eagles even have, the Giants cannot run the ball against it. That's really been an interesting theme this year. The Giants have been able to run the ball on a few teams this year. It's really been, if you can't defend the run, the Giants will have a shot. And it won't even be consistent yardage. They'll, you know, they'll break some runs off. But the Giants haven't really had a consistent run game all year. I think, you know, the Eagles will have no problem making them one-dimensional in this game. So as in short, you know, the Eagles are better up front, really on both sides of the ball. I mean, the Giants have Odell Beckham, but I think you'd look at what the Eagles have in their depth of targets, and I'd say, and you'd say, you know, I think Eli Manning would rather be throwing to 3 or 4 guys of that quality, rather than, you know, really just what is the Odell Beckham show right now. Well, maybe, I don't know. I mean, Odell Beckham has been such a superstar and has been so unbelievable. maybe not. But I think the depth was the theme earlier. I think, you know, the Eagles just have a stronger roster and probably, you know, the better coach as well.
And before we get to the token prediction here, final question leading into this game. Who does this game mean more to? Because both teams have obviously no shot at the playoffs. Philadelphia down and out after three straight losses, from blowout to heartbreaking to gut-wrenching losses, to be brutally honest. And New York, like you mentioned, trying to end on a four-game winning streak and, you know, squash any doubt that Tom Coughlin's coming back next year. To me, on the surface, it seems like this game is more important to the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would justify a lot of that if the Giants would end this game on a four-game winning streak. And I guess I'd be interested to hear what you guys think about it and really what it means to the Eagles, because, I mean, the Eagles, I think, still need to find a way to win, just because, you know, 10-6 and 9-7 looks a whole lot different. You know, you can argue 10-6 and say, you know, we had a good season, there were better teams, we didn't get into the playoffs at 10-6. 9-7, you know, teams get in the playoffs at 9-7 and it's still a winning record, but it's such a it'll feel like such a disappointment, I'm sure, for the Eagles and their fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, four straight losses, what they thought they had coming off of Thanksgiving. But in terms of the Giants, I think it's I think to end the season on a high note would be really important and would justify a lot of things and would really get people excited going forward into, you know, we thought we never knew when we'd win a game, you know, again in October, but, you know, here we are, four game winning streak to end the season. You know, 7-9, we weren't, you know, 4-12, which we thought we might be at one point. You know, there's pieces to build on here. I think it'd be very important for the Giants to find a way.
Well, you've said that, you know, there's a lack of quality wins this year for the Giants. I would think the fans up there and the Giants themselves would consider beating the Eagles a quality win.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Mike, Dave, since you probably don't listen to our show regularly, Mike is a degenerate gambler. At least we've labeled him as that. He often, before we preface the prediction portion, we ask for the line and the over-under. So go ahead, Mr. Jimmy the Not-So-Greek. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, right now the line, as we know, I think it opened at 2, but right now it's 2.5 in favor of the Giants. That's a Giants line the way that I read it. Over under on this one is 52. I'll tell you, I think the folks up in Giant Land have got to be liking the way this one sounds.
Yeah. Go ahead. What do you think, David? How do you think it plays out?
I think you'd want to take that over. the way the Giants. I mean, you know, the Giants didn't score a point the first round, but things have changed on both sides on both teams. But, you know, the number one is Odell Beckham. No one has been able to stop him. I don't think the Eagles will be able to. That's just how it's been. The Rams were the team that was supposed to stop him. He scored he's twice as many touchdowns against the Rams in one game that they've given up, you know, the past three. So I think both teams will be scoring points. Like I mentioned before, I mean, the Giants' defense, I don't think it's going to cause – I think Philadelphia offense will cause the Giants' defense a whole lot of problems. But I think the Giants will find a way to score some points as well. I would definitely take the over on that.
Okay, fair enough. While we have you on here, the least we can do for having you have to put up with Mike, I mean with us, is tell us about what's going on at thegiantsbeat.com. We want to learn more about your side of things heading into the matchup Sunday.
Sure. You can check us out at thegiantsbeat.com, news, analysis. We do a podcast as well. In fact, I'm recording ours in about a half hour. It's myself and a senior writer, Aaron York. We will do a podcast, probably up, you know, later today or perhaps tomorrow. And we do two a week. We'll probably hit one later this week that'll cover preview this game. The one we'll be doing today, we'll focus more on the Giants win at against the Rams. And you can also check me out on Twitter at daken90. Yes.
There you go.
Awesome. Hey, they're working on Christmas Eve too there, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're working. See, they're working in the daytime. They're smart. They're pre-recording everything. We're mostly live Thursday night or Wednesday night. Well, we're live all over the place on Frat House Sports. But so it goes. David, many thanks for your time, and happy holidays. Good luck to the Giants up there. This Sunday afternoon in what should be an interesting renewal of the oldest rivalry in the division.
Yep.
Thank you guys so much for having me on. Happy holidays to you guys as well.
Bye.
Thanks, David. We'll talk
Take
with
care.
You. David Akin joining us from the GiantsBeat.com here inside the War Nest. Jim Williams, Mike McShane back with you. A few minutes left. Let's dissect the game a little bit. Well,
That break couldn't have come at a better time, Jim. I mean, we got.
What do you mean?
Well, a little Italian sausage over here.
Oh.
They got the shrimp cocktail going.
We got the feast of seven fishes going on there.
Well, no. Listen, I'm Irish. I'm Irish now. But we got a little potato salad, you know. So, no, we dabble in a little bit of it all. You know what I mean? We got a little Pennsylvania Dutch, a little bit of Italian, a little bit.
I know where to go next Christmas. That's for sure. Fair enough. There's really no need in dissecting the game per se because it is a meaningless game. But give us a prediction.
Well,
I'm going to interrupt you for a second because before you do. This is very important to you. The line has gone up in favor of the Giants. It's now the Giants by 3.
Wow. Oh, boy. Yeah, that does make it. You know, that half point does actually, well, for us degenerate gamblers, that means a lot. But no.
Oh, yes.
That means the difference between coaling my stocking tomorrow and not. But look, here's the bottom line. You know, you heard me there, and frankly, I agree with David as we're coming out of that interview. I do believe he's right. The Giants actually have more to play for here than the Eagles. Mm-hmm. But I think somewhere, forget the management of the Eagles team. I think I'm hoping that somewhere inside the heart of this team, there's a pissed off Eagle fan.
Go ahead. I'm hearing you.
That is.
I got Man of La Mancha. I've got Robert Goulet's Man of La Mancha in the background. Go ahead.
The impossible dream.
Oh, listen to you. Now that's just not right. But no, seriously. I'd like to think that they're going to come out. They're going to be pissed off. They're going to be pissed off at the circumstances. 3 in a row? Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Jim, I think this is – where did I read? I think this is one of the top 4 collapses since 1963.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read that somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where I'm going to go with it. I don't normally do this. I hate to do it. I hate to sound like a homer. 32-24 Eagles.
I'm pretty much going to be in complete opposite with you for once. I think the Giants play with more, i.e. to ensure their coach comes back next season. I think the Giants win this one. It'll be close, 27-20. I think the Giants win it. The Eagles go to 9-7, and maybe if we lose a loss in the win column, maybe that'll spark a synapse in the brain of Chip Kelly, at least one can only hope.
It'll help our draft position.
And that's the other aspect of it, too. You're absolutely right. Quickly, before we go, it is Christmas Eve.
Yes.
We have compiled our lists of naughty and nice for the... I'll let you go first. Give me, you know what, I'm a positive guy, so give me the naughty list first. Yeah, I know that made no sense, but go ahead.
Oh, the naughty list. Okay, you want the naughty list.
No,
naughty
like
list.
Players or personnel you deem naughty.
I know. And yours are going to be filled
for naught.
Yours are going to be filled with defensive players. Mine are not. Mm-hmm. Because I'm an offensive guy when it comes to football. How about Riley Cooper, LeSean McCoy, Nick Foles, and Mark Sanchez?
I put Brent
Celek kind of on the – he's in between. He's not quite on the naughty list, but he's not on the nice list.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't put McCoy on the naughty list. I would. I would not do that because he – you can only get what you're being given. I would fault the coaching more a little bit than McCoy himself, even though he did have a rough start, no question about it. Yeah, my naughty list is pretty much anybody mm-hmm. who plays secondary for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Exactly. I knew it. I gave it to you. I knew you were going there.
That's pretty much my list. Let's go to the nice list. What do you got on the nice side?
Connor Barwin. Huh?
Oh, absolutely.
Really? Come on. Mm-hmm. Cody Parkey. Huh? Seriously?
Last week notwithstanding, yes.
Fletcher Cox.
How he got snubbed from a Pro Bowl is beyond me.
Yep.
He got snubbed, and that ain't right.
There's my three.
All right, on my end, Darren Sproles. You have got to include Sproles for what he did on special
game
teams.
Game plan. I mean, what are we doing with this guy? Jim, real quick question before you go forward. I've brought it up before. There was a reason why the Saints didn't utilize him. Why suddenly did the Eagles decide to do similarly? I don't understand it.
Don't understand it for the life of me. Also on my nice list, Jordan Matthews, who I think is mm-hmm. a blue chipper, and I think he's going to become something.
Very good.
Of
right.
himself. See, I'm on offense on the nice list you see here. It's kind of nice. I'm with you on Fletcher Cox and Connor Barwin, absolutely. Also, Chris Maragos on the special teams.
How about that? Yes, you're right.
Absolute beast mode. Couple of block punt returns for touchdowns. In fact, I'm also going to just throw in a coordinator, Dave Phipp, special teams coordinator. He's coached them up pretty damn well this year. So he gets on the nice list as well. Everybody else gets either Cole or Cole's gift cards. I don't know. So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll take the latter.
We have a Kohl's here in near where I live, and I've never been in it. So there you go. If only Wanamakers were still in business, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, I mean,
have I mentioned Wanamakers recently?
Yes. Meet me at the Eagle, Mike. Meet me at the Eagle. And then listen to the largest pipe organ in the world. Yes, the Wanamakers. Merry Christmas to you, my friend. We will do this again
next week for
the season
finale.
Merry
Christmas to everybody out there.
Absolutely. For Mike McShane, I'm Jim Williams. Thanks for making us a part of your Christmas Eve and your holiday. We'll talk to you next week, New Year's Eve. It'll be New Year's Rockin' Eve. Who am I kidding? Thanks for listening. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to all. And to all, good night, everybody.